views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most inspired visionaries on the planet in lighthearted, lively dialogue. Join us as we explore the expansive nature of reality in a down-to-earth way, offering you insights and tools empowering you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Now, here's your host, Christine Upchurch.
Hello, everybody. Welcome. Welcome to the Christine Upchurch Show. You might be listening today in the Seattle area on 1150 AM KKNW. You might be listening somewhere around the world on Transformation Talk Radio on one of the 90 syndicated stations. And I can't even, you know, tell you which ones those are, but there are a whole lot of places this show goes to, or after the fact on ChristineUpchurch.com. But whenever and wherever you're listening from today, you're going to be glad you joined us, because we're going to be talking about something that affects each and every one of us. But before I get into that, I want to say hello to my better half here in the studio, who has had a birthday this week.
Yay!
Mr. Benny Mathers.
I did. Thank you very much. Yep, the big 4-1. There I go. I'll give myself a round of applause. Thank you, studio audience. And we're done.
Happy birthday.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I didn't do much yesterday. In fact, that's officially when it was, because obviously I had to be here bright and early. Uh-huh. And I'll probably kind of let loose a little bit this weekend.
Yeah, well, enjoy.
Thank you.
You deserve it.
Thank you.
You deserve it. You know, our guest today has an interesting background, considering what he's writing about. He is a professor at Johns Hopkins University. He's got doctoral degrees, as in plural, in both medicine and philosophy, as well as a master's degree in public health. He's a cardiologist and a scientist, and his name is Amin Zadeh, and he has firsthand experience about the close relationship between heart disease and the state of the mind. And in fact, he has had a lifelong obsession trying to learn about what it is about love, how to define it, why it's important, how it develops, and how to foster love in our lives. And he's the author of The Forgotten Art of Love, What Love Means and Why It Matters. I'd like to welcome our guest today, Dr. Amin Zadeh. Hi. Hi, Amin.
Well, hi, Christine. Thank you so much for having me, and happy birthday to Benny.
Oh, thank you very much. Appreciate that. Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's I'm fascinated when somebody who, you know, is very scientific wants to venture into what I consider to be either a psychological or spiritual realm. Why is a cardiologist wanting to evaluate and learn about and teach about love?
Well, there are actually a number of different reasons which particularly drew me into the subject. I mean, for one, there's the philosophical aspect. Like everybody else, I'm trying to make sense of this life. And what is the purpose of it all? And clearly, love is an answer, if not the answer. But we seem to struggle with keeping love as our focus in life. And that led me into the science aspect. As I'm foremost a researcher, and as a scientist, we're trying to understand things. I'm interested to know why we struggle with keeping a focus on love in our lives. And why is love so central for our happiness? How is it anchored in our biology? So here's then where my medical background came in, trying to understand how love affects our body and mind. And in regards to me being a cardiologist, we know that love has a profound effect on our health, but particularly heart health. And just last week, there was another report showing that the quality of marriage, particularly steadily happy marriage, or improving marriage, or versus not happy, correlates with cholesterol and blood pressure values. And we know that folks who have loving relationships live longer and healthier than those in unhappy relationships or without any relationships. So there are a number of reasons to be interested in exploring the nature of love. And to me, it came from different angles. And in addition, there are life events which point you one in another or in the other direction. In my case, they reinforced my interest in understanding the phenomenon of love.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I know this is a simple question, but I'm sure the answer is very complex. How do you define love?
Well, it's difficult, obviously. You know, if you look up love in Wikipedia or in any dictionary, you won't find any unified definition or a definition most people agree upon. And there are reasons for that. It's a highly loaded and complex topic.
Uh-huh.
I went out, though, in my book and came up with a working diagnosis. I'm going back into medical here. Working a definition for love. And that is the urge and the continuous effort for the happiness and well-being of somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And what I was trying to do here is to emphasize two key components. The one is the emotional aspect, and that's something that we all very much relate to. In fact, that is the perception probably most of us have, that this love is an emotion. But the other component, I feel, is often less well recognized, and that is the commitment portion.
Mm.
So urge refers to the feeling that we really have that urgency to do something for the happiness of somebody. But then there's a continuous effort, which is at least as important, and which refers to the commitment portion. So
mm-hmm.
I try to combine these two, and then the outcome is, you know, the happiness and well-being of somebody.
Mm-hmm. So I know that when we talk about love in our culture, at least, people often are describing falling in love, the romantic love at the beginning of a relationship. You talk a little bit about the biology of that, and you've come up with this great way of sort of looking at that separately from other types of committed love. Can you share with our listeners a little bit about the biology of falling in love?
Yes, yeah, so this is really fascinating. And in recent years, there have been a number of studies using MRI of the brain,
uh-huh.
the so-called functional MRI of the brain, along with blood tests to see what happens when we fall in love. And what they did is they compared these studies, these brain studies and these blood studies, among folks who just recently fell in love with those who were in long-term committed relationships. And they really were astounded at the extent of differences they found. And so they're really different areas of the brain which are activated when we are falling in love. Interestingly, there are areas of the brain which are close to areas which are associated with very compulsive activities, maybe explaining some of our obsessive, behavior when we just fell in love.
Right.
And they also found a number of blood hormones which were distinctly different in those who just fell in love versus long-term love. And
then uh-huh.
among those are blood hormones which you're quite familiar with, like dopamine and
the feel-good hormone, yes.
The feel-good hormone but also oxytocin,
uh-huh.
but cortisol levels also were higher. And cortisol is a hormone which is associated somewhat with stress.
Yes, that was surprising. I find that very surprising that cortisol goes up when you're falling in love.
Yeah, I think the researchers were too. But it gets to the state of excitement, because when we are just in love, we are very excited. It's our whole world is different, and our energy level is up. So it kind of makes sense that cortisol levels are also up.
Uh-huh.
So, but the key thing is there were distinct differences between those who just fell in love versus those who are in long-term happy relationships. And all of these participants, they had high levels of happiness and contentment.
Uh-huh.
But the point, again, is there's a distinct difference, it seems, in terms of physiology, in terms of just falling in love versus long-term love.
Uh-huh.
And
so,
as you said,
So
there is, we generally be craving for this early phase, mm-hmm. the falling in love phase, mm-hmm. because it is so wonderful and there is so much excitement. And that is what we often or generally we associate with love in general when we talk about love.
Right. So does that last?
Well, it doesn't. And so the research essentially confirmed what we knew all along, that this falling in love phase, this hyper-excitement, does not last, that phase. It typically ranges between 1 to 4 years. That's uh-huh. the typical range. And there's obviously some variability always. But then the hormones return to normal, the activity in the brain changes. It is very predictable that this phase lasts only a few years, and then it dissipates.
So what might the biological or evolutionary reasoning be behind, that kind of intensity lasting for that period of time?
Well, we don't know for sure, but the theory is that it lasts that long because evolutionary, we believe the falling in love phase is there to make us mate and to produce, children, offspring.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's the force or the main idea of evolution to bring to pass on our DNA to the next generation. And the thought is that the intense bonding between two people over 3 to 4 years is sufficient to get A, the mating, and B, get the offspring, the child, through the most vulnerable period, which is the first, 2-3 years.
Mm-hmm. So to keep, the father nearby, at least for a couple of years,
right,
after birth.
Typically, that's the situation, that the father is nearby for that time, and it's just to protect the young family. But it's believed that beyond 3 to 4 years, the father is less critical in because that child is less vulnerable, and one parent may be enough to further raise that child to reproductive age.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why this period, this intense period, lasts only that long. I mean, again, it's only that this intense period lasts that long. It doesn't mean that immediately in this case, the father will leave,
uh-huh.
But it seems like that from evolutionist standpoint, that is the critical moment or the critical period to facilitate the growth of that child to that age, and everything else is less critical.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is fascinating. I love to learn about the science, and that you've also got a lot of information about the philosophy and how to keep love alive and different types of relationships. We're going to go to a quick break, but more about the forgotten art of love here in just a few moments.
Love and happiness, yeah, something that can make you do wrong, make you do right, yeah. Love.
Chances are you've been on your conscious journey for many years, and you've learned a lot about manifesting a wonderful life. But if you are like many others on their spiritual paths, you may still have some area of your life where you're feeling stuck. Perhaps you've read many books, attended lots of workshops, listened to many programs, and done plenty of inner work, and yet there is still something you'd like to change. With all the information out there, it may be hard to see the forest for the trees. Do you want to get a bird's eye view of that forest so you are empowered to navigate more effectively? Do you want to know the key to positive change and develop a personalized strategy for creating the changes you desire? Please join me, Christine Upchurch, for a 4-week webinar series beginning January 9th. Start your new year right and embrace the vibration of change. For more information, visit ChristineUpchurch.com. That's ChristineUpchurch.com or call 425-999-9836.
Calling all moms, it's time to awaken your vibrant, intuitive, loving self in every area of your life. Join host Debbie Pokornik as she shares thoughts, stories, and tools to help you stand in your power. Listen to Vibrant, Powerful Moms helping everyday women create extraordinary lives, Mondays at 2:30 Pacific, 5:30 Eastern. For more information about Debbie, visit empoweringenergy.com. That's empowering with letters NRG.com.
I'm Christine Upchurch, and this is a Stellar Reflections Minute. What does the word healing mean? Many think that healing merely means eliminating symptoms. However, based on my many years as a healer, I have a much broader perspective on the word. Healing can manifest in a variety of ways, including having physical problems resolved, becoming more emotionally centered, experiencing better relationships, gaining greater clarity, and feeling more spiritually connected. True healing always includes some level of transformation. Whatever form healing takes, there is one commonality, an improvement in quality of life. To me, the highest form of healing goes beyond aligning with wellness. It comes from recognizing our soul's voice and allowing it to speak through us. And in that sense, don't we all yearn to heal into our wholeness? Please visit StellarReflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
Hi there, this is Audrey Michelle, host of Rewired Life Radio. If you've listened to the show, you know I talk a lot about listening to your body. Here's the deal. Listening to your body takes quieting your mind, and I want to teach you how. Actually, we're going to start right now. Take a deep breath, a truly deep breath, all the way to the top of your inhale, and then exhaling to the very bottom of your belly, breathing, feeding your body the oxygen and fuel it needs. This is the first step in listening to your body. There's more, but it's so easy. I want to share a quick meditation with you to help you instantly reconnect with yourself and listen to your body. Simply go to audreymichelle.com/tips and download it for free today. That's Audrey Michelle, spelled michelle.com/tips.
Welcome back to the Christine Upchurch Show here on KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio. I'm speaking today to Professor Amin Zadeh from Johns Hopkins, and we are talking about love. And I'm fascinated, Amin, about the physiology and the biology behind love. And you talked about that first 1 to 4 year period where it's this intense falling in love. And I think most of us have experienced that. It's this thrill of a ride. And then things start to level out. Then what?
Well, so that's where we have to step it up. Because we get the falling in love period essentially for free. We don't really have to do much. You know, we just have to sit back and enjoy, because these powerful hormones really take over and carry us and carry largely the relationship. And because most of us would agree that the first few years in a new relationship are wonderful, and there's usually very little confrontation, there's few crises, things are typically quite happy, everything is good. Mm-hmm. And that is facilitated by these happy hormones. So once they are declining, then it's up to us to step up and to take a larger control in the relationship. And that is, unfortunately, also where many relationships break up, because we don't have that kind of support anymore. And if we, particularly if we don't see or recognize that there is a distinct difference, then we're not able to step up and do our part. So the key, or one of the key important aspects of understanding love is that it is a phase, the falling in love phase, mm-hmm. and that it will inevitably cease. And because many of us still have that notion that love is this feeling, this what we have in the beginning, which we want to last forever. and the entertainment industry, particularly the movies, the songs, they're all about this early phase. And you know, we really do crave that phase, and we want this phase to be the one, you know, which, you know, we have all along.
Right. And but it's really strange what happens. It's kind of like those things, those qualities, those behaviors that during that initial stage you found, may have found endearing, become annoying or somehow make you feel off balance. I mean, it's this strange kind of transition from, wow, this is fabulous, to, oh my goodness, I didn't realize all these things were in this relationship, and now I'm not happy with them.
Right, right. But again, it is the hormones who make us do this, or rather who cloud our ability to see clearly. So, so the cliche that we love fools, you know, holds true.
Right,
that,
right.
There's actually evidence that our decision making is heavily influenced in this early phase, that we are not able to make the same rational decisions that we typically can make in these first few years.
Right.
And that by itself, I think, is important to recognize, so because it should probably make us pause and maybe not rush into commitments during this first few years, knowing that, you know, we're not thinking as clearly as we usually do.
Sure. Okay, so let's say that, you know, you've made it through that stage and the transition into, you know, the normal, back into the normal hormonal feelings, and the emotions sort of shift back to like a, you know, less excited. How do we nurture love if it's right?
Well, so here I was interested in trying to understand the mechanics of loving after this initial phase. So what is it actually happening in our brain? How does our brain work? And so here it's important to note that, you know, first of all, our perception of happiness, of anything, is obviously due to our processing of information. It is not something which is absolute, meaning that everybody has or perceives things, you know, differently. Mm-hmm. And we know that because some people are very happy in a situation which is, seems to be exactly the same as other people.
Right.
But the one person is very happy, the other person is very unhappy. You know,
right.
Very, everything can be seen quite differently person to person. So in our mind, we constantly updating information about our environment and see how that matches with our expectations.
Uh-huh.
So one very important aspect is, what expectations do we have, you know, of our current situation? And that, again, is modifiable. And so the art of loving is to know what our expectations are and to be able to have realistic expectations,
mm-hmm.
and then assess the situation accordingly, with the recognition that, you know, the higher the expectations we have, the greater our, you know, chances that we are unhappy with the situation. So
uh-huh.
a lot about love in general, so when talking about in general love and then talking about romantic love, but they are related. The concept is actually related, and we can talk about it a little later about the differences, but the mechanisms of loving is actually similar, whether we're talking about brotherly love or romantic love.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that our mind is constantly exposed to demands, impulses, and drives.
Right.
And these drives and impulses are geared towards short-term satisfaction and
uh-huh.
gratification.
Uh-huh.
And many of them are simple to understand, such as, you know, basic needs, hunger, thirst, etc. But there are also a lot of other demands on us, and they're gearing more towards our position in society, wealth, power, etc. And these are also very powerful influences.
Mm-hmm.
And they are interfering, or conflicting rather, with our love impulse. We all have a very strong love impulse. It's inherent in us, and we also believe it is an evolutionary drive, a very strong evolutionary drive.
Right.
But it conflicts with these other drives. And the better we are able just to A, recognize these conflicts, and B, rejecting self-serving, more egotistic drives in favor of loving drives, the better we are off as a person and the better we are off as somebody in a relationship or for a relationship.
So that means
that
we need to have this
complicated.
But it sounds like we need to have the self-awareness to be able to decipher, you know, what's motivating us. What's motivating our expectations? Is it the ego or the need to connect?
Yes, and that is exactly right. So love starts very much with ourselves, which is counterintuitive, you know, because you know we're thinking of love, as we discussed earlier, as something directed at somebody else.
Right.
But it starts very much, as you said, you know, with how we see ourselves and how we happy we are in our skin, how content we are of who we are and how we define who we are.
Mm-hmm.
Now, are we somebody who, you know, has certain expectations, again, the word expectations, to be somebody, you know, in regarded among others, you know, with certain characteristics,
right.
You know, being like somebody in high standing, somebody wealthy, somebody beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And if these things are very important to us and to confirm this assessment of ours, then we are constantly looking for affirmation of this.
Right.
The other extreme is somebody who's extremely self-sufficient in terms of needing external affirmation, someone who's very happy to be just the person who he is, and therefore not constantly being under the influence of these drives, you know, which competing with love.
Right, right. Yeah.
So it is, and that sounds all fairly straightforward, but the actual realization of these things on a daily basis are extremely, extremely difficult.
Right. I think it probably requires a whole lot of self-awareness. This is a fascinating conversation, Amin, and I'm looking forward to looking at this further, including what it means and what happens when we love our children. Stay tuned for more about the forgotten art of love.
I'm Christine Upchurch, and this is a Stellar Reflections Minute. As a former research statistician, my scientific background is what many would call sensible. For more than a decade now, I have been working in the field of energy medicine, facilitating sessions and teaching around the world. People from the mainstream often ask me, how did a sensible woman like you end up working in such an alternative field? Implicit in their question is the underlying assumption that the field of subtle energy, such as energy healing and intuition, isn't sensible. But I believe it is very sensible. Even scientists are able to measure aspects of this. Approaching life from an energetic perspective brings us new opportunity for healing and transformation. And from a practical standpoint, even if you can't rationally explain how something works, if you experience a shift from it, then doesn't it make it pretty sensible? Please visit stellarreflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836. Chances are you've been on your conscious journey for many years and you've learned a lot about manifesting a wonderful life. But if you are like many others on their spiritual paths, you may still have some area of your life where you're feeling stuck. Perhaps you've read many books, attended lots of workshops, listened to many programs, and done plenty of inner work, and yet there is still something you'd like to change. With all the information out there, it may be hard to see the forest for the trees. Do you want to get a bird's eye view of that forest so you are empowered to navigate more effectively? Do you want to know the key to positive change and develop a personalized strategy for creating the changes you desire? Please join me, Christine Upchurch, for a 4-week webinar series beginning January 9th. Start your new year right and embrace the vibration of change. For more information, visit ChristineUpchurch.com. That's ChristineUpchurch.com or call 425-999-9836. Have you been seeing numbers like 111 and 222 everywhere you go? Do you feel that the universe may be trying to get your attention, perhaps offering a message of some sort? As it turns out, numerical patterns and certain types of geometry form the very fabric of our reality, from cells under a microscope to the astronomy of our night sky. At Stellar Reflections, we offer special sessions which tap into these patterns, designed specifically to support you on your journey. The 111 and 222 activations are sessions activating new patterns in your energy field, which in turn can help you create new patterns in your life. After just one session with a practitioner, either in person or via distance, clients report gaining greater clarity, becoming more intuitive, and honoring their inner truth as they move forward in their lives. Curious about what these transformational sessions might do for you? Call 425-999-9836 or visit StellarReflections.com. That's StellarReflections.com. Welcome back to the Christine Epchurch Show here on KKNWM Transformation Talk Radio. If you're just joining us now, I wanted to let you know that I am talking to Dr. Amin Zadeh, and he is an MD, PhD, you know, one of these people who's gotten lots of education, and a professor at Johns Hopkins, and we are talking about love. Now, in the first half hour, we were talking a lot about love as it relates to the romantic relationship, with the partnership relationship. Okay, so those of us who've had children know that the love we feel for our kids is surprisingly intense. What makes that both the same and different than love for a romantic partner, besides the obvious piece of, you know, it's not a sexual kind of relationship?
Yeah, so I think that's really fascinating. As you say, most of us feel that our love for children is special, and it's very intense. And that's not to say that the relationship with our children is easy. You know, obviously,
right.
And that's, I think it's very important to distinguish these two, relationship and love. And in fact, that's the important focus in my book, because we often use love and relationship as the same expression, but in fact they are different phenomena. We can be in a relationship and not really feel a lot of love, and in fact our relationships, you know, they're really devoid of love. And then there are situations where we love somebody and we're not in a relationship. So these are different entities.
Yes.
And the difference, the principal difference between relationships which are not romantic and romantic, I believe, is that in regular relationships, the two components, important components, are love and attachment.
Mm-hmm.
And attachment is also a drive, such as love. And let's say it's something we are quite familiar with. And the longer we spend with somebody, the more we get attached to that person. But it is not love. It's a different drive.
Right, right.
Now, and we have long-term friends. We have both. We have love for them, but we also get more and more attached to them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with other relationships, with romantic relationships, we have love, attachment, and in addition to that, we have passion that is mostly related to what we talked earlier, particularly the early phase where we have very strong, intense feelings, and there's typically also sexual attraction. So then we have four major components in romantic relationship. And that may also explain why romantic relationships are so challenging, because we're dealing with, you know, four major dynamics which all change over time. And we are very quick to confuse if there's a change in a relationship to attribute it to love, whereas in fact it may be one of these other components which change, while our love, in fact, is quite quite steady. Love, indeed, is the glue of a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
The other components may vary, but, you know, we have a lot of influence on our love, whereas the other components, it's harder to have, you know, a direct influence on it. Now, in terms of our children, this is a relationship you know, where we have strong love, attachment.
Uh-huh.
But interestingly, you know, we have a very, you know, high levels of intensity in terms of our emotions for our children, not dissimilar to what we feel when we fall in love romantically.
Right.
So they are actually, some of the same hormones are implicated in that process, and explaining why we have such intense feelings for our children. And the other very fascinating aspect is that these, you know, feelings continue. They don't cease or decline, that we have these passionate feelings in romantic love. They decline, as we discussed about. But for your children, they are lifelong. And that's actually a unique human experience, as far as we can tell. There's no example in the animal world where the relationship between parents and children persists beyond their reaching adulthood.
Even other primates.
Even in primates. So it's very interesting. That is, the human are unique in that they maintain a lifelong relationships with their parent, which is, again, not found in the animal world.
Right.
So they are, you know, obviously, again, very, very strong feelings there, and it's intuitive because, you know, our children, you know, particularly from an evolutionary standpoint, we want our children to grow up and to become adults.
Right.
But the aspect of that we actually have these relationships with our children beyond adulthood points to something some scientists believe is part of the reason why humans have been so successful in evolution, that they maintain these very strong bonds even beyond reaching adulthood.
So the grandparents essentially can help the parents raise the grandchildren. And so it's basically multi-generational, probably helps support and help the health and well-being of those children.
Exactly. And then by forming these greater groups, you know, having more protection in terms of enemies and better food supply, etc.
Uh-huh.
So
right.
it's a fascinating aspect. And in fact, you know, we typically assign that paradigm, survival of the fittest, to evolution by Darwin. But if you read his later work specifically about human evolution, he's very clear about that he credits love to be as the major, if not the major, force for allowing the great success in evolution.
Mm-hmm. And I know that there's some researchers who came beyond after him and found that cooperation is a really important part of our evolution, which is what you are talking about right now.
Right.
It's a type of cooperation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So one of the things I'm fascinated by as a parent who's had children, I've got two kids, 17 and age 23, is that they change. And so the love continues, although the relationship is continually changing. It's like you get into a romantic relationship and you have this intense, you know, year to 4 years, whatever it is, 6 months, and you hope that that continues. And yet with children, automatically the relationship has to change as they grow. How do parents deal with the changing relationship within the context of loving them?
Yes, so that is a challenge we're all facing as parents. I have four children
uh-huh.
at various ages, ranging from 8 to 21.
Uh-huh.
So I'm very much in the same boat. And but the challenge, you know, obviously, is that we want the best for our children.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to disconnect that from what we believe is best and eventually allowing them to recognize what's best for them
right.
themselves.
So it's letting go of some of that attachment then.
That's right. Yeah. So we have very strong attachment, and it's difficult to let go. And we want to be protecting them.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, we need to allow them to make their own decision and have, you know, the confidence in them that they're making the right decision. And even, you know, if we, and it's very painful to us, and sometimes they don't make the right decision, and we. But that's part of the growing up process. But the key aspect is to focused on the key principle of love, which is, you know, working towards the happiness and well-being of somebody, which with that comes the respect, you know, for them, and not trying to force our own opinions on them. You know, we're there for advice. We're always there for advice,
right.
But you know, we cannot make them, you know, live our lives or what we think is right. They eventually need to make this on their own, but it's a difficult concept.
Yeah, and it is very difficult, especially when you see that they're going down a path where you're quite sure that it's not going to increase their happiness, but actually do the opposite and cause them more and more pain.
Right. Yeah, and these are the situations where it's extremely challenging. Where again, but I think it helps that to be frank with them and mm-hmm. saying, "Well, that's my view. I respect your view. And I'll let you decide, because it's your life. At a certain point, it's your life. You're making the decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all you can do in this situation. You can make your voice heard, but then realizing that beyond that, it's probably little you can do. But it is very challenging at times. Yes.
Oh yes, absolutely. You know, I'm fascinated by something. I mean, that you talk about in your book, and that is that. How to love well can be taught. And I know that, you know, as we get into our teenage years, as we get into sexual maturity, we think that love is just something that happens to us. We're going to go to another quick break, but when you return, I'm going to want you to share with our listeners your perspective on how we should be teaching our children how to love. More with Amin Zadeh in just a few moments. Chances are you've been on your conscious journey for many years, and you've learned a lot about manifesting a wonderful life. But if you are like many others on their spiritual paths, you may still have some area of your life where you're feeling stuck. Perhaps you've read many books, attended lots of workshops, listened to many programs, and done plenty of inner work, and yet there is still something you'd like to change. With all the information out there, it may be hard to see the forest for the trees. Do you want to get a bird's eye view of that forest so you are empowered to navigate more effectively? Do you want to know the key to positive change and develop a personalized strategy for creating the changes you desire? Please join me, Christine Upchurch, for a 4-week webinar series beginning January 9th. Start your new year right and embrace the vibration of change. For more information, visit ChristineUpchurch.com. That's ChristineUpchurch.com or call 425-999-9836.
Interested in deepening your spiritual practice? The School for Esoteric Studies offers online training to spiritual seekers from all paths of life and individual coaching. Our courses synthesize Eastern and Western spiritual traditions based on meditation, study, and service applied to everyday life. To learn more about our courses and services, please visit www.esotericstudies.net.
Tune in to Knowledge Book Radio with host Marge Potasek each Tuesday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Through many experiences, Marge was led to the Knowledge Book, a gift to humanity in its transition to the Golden Age, and it provided the truth and the answers. She now shares information from the Knowledge Book with you each week on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information, visit usa.theknowledgebook.net.
I'm Peggy Snow with another Stellar Reflections Minute. Presence, or what we think of as being fully in the moment, is a key element in the process of healing work. As a practitioner facilitating a session, genuine presence takes us out of our heads, where we tend to decide what is and maybe what should be for the client, and moves us into direct experience where we're available to witness the person in their wholeness. In this receptive realm, our senses are heightened and expanded, allowing us to perceive what's seeking to unfold and to interact in the moment. There's something profoundly powerful that happens when healing is approached in this simple, pure way. Balance can be restored and healing can take place on multiple levels. If you'd like more information about the services we offer at Stellar Reflections, visit us at stellarreflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
Welcome back to the Christine Epchurch Show. I'm so glad you're joining us here today. And, you know, I have to tell you, I have the pleasure of getting to talk to our guest during the break. And we've been having fascinating discussions. And poor Benny has to kind of lasso us back into, okay, we got to get back
on
the
air. I'm roping really well right now.
I think I'm
100%,
job.
So you better watch it.
I'm not going to mess with you, Benny. You know, I mean, I know that you talk in your book about learning how to consciously love, and it's an art, and I know that you also talk about some of the science. So first of all, how do you teach this, and then ultimately, how should we be teaching our children?
As you said earlier, I think the key thing is awareness of the dynamics. If we are aware that the falling in love period is a period,
uh-huh,
and it's not what love is all about. If we know that after 3 to 4 years, typically it dissipates, that already helps quite a bit, because then we may have different expectations. We're not going to be disappointed after 3-4 years about the change in our feelings, and we are ready, in fact, then to step it up. I think a lot of this really is understanding how things work. And that can be taught easily.
Mm-hmm.
So I, you know, feel that particularly adolescents in this time, and they are on a very vulnerable period, as we know.
Sure.
You know, teenagers are dealing, you know, with their changing hormones. They're dealing with their first crushes, and at the same time, they have these incredible academic pressures. And I have children on my own, and I'm just amazed at how much pressure these adolescents have.
It's incredible, and I think that it's actually out of balance. It was not that bad when I was in school.
No, it really wasn't. And I cite some frightening statistics in the book about the increasing stress levels perceived by our teenagers. And you know, for instance, in a 2013 survey by the American Psychological Association, teenagers reported stress levels that equaled or even exceeded those perceived by adults.
Wow.
With approximately 1/3 of teens expressing signs of depression. I mean,
ooh,
this is awful.
That's terrible.
And to cope with these increased stress levels, teenagers turn more frequently to alcohol, drugs, and most sadly, in the suicide rates increased by almost 1/4. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Oh.
1/4 between 1999 and 2014 in the United States.
That's terrible.
It is absolutely horrific. And the greatest increase among females was actually seen among girls aged 10 to 14. I mean, this is
really
really awful. And there is, fortunately, there's some awareness about these things happening, but there can never be enough awareness, because it's hard to imagine what's going to happen, you know, to this generation later on, because it's easy to see that there is scarring occurring in these precious times.
Right.
So the idea here I bring up is to have some kind of love or health class in high school, which focuses on discussions on love.
Uh-huh.
And there should be for attendance only. There shouldn't be any additional grades given. And really, that's for the,
right,
for the, your children, just to sit back, get their minds off academics, and think about something else.
Mm-hmm.
And do it, you know, together. And the topic's going to be love and concepts of happiness, pretty much what we'll be discussing here.
Uh-huh.
And promoting and understanding how these things affect us and how they work.
Right.
And again, once adolescents understand well, what is it? What is love? You know, what happens to us? What happens with our brain? And why is it difficult later in a relationship versus earlier? And particularly see from science that our decisions we make in that early falling in love periods are heavily affected by our state, by these hormones.
Right.
And this is really critical information every adolescent should have.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot just rely, I think, on parents and on other sources. And I think that's something as a society, I think we should have enough interest to make it a priority. Among all these things we're teaching our children, we know
right.
that most of these, or many of these things at least, they will never use in their entire life. We should, I think, focus on something which is really of concrete help to them, not only in that period, but also forming in terms of formative for their entire life. If they
right.
understand that love is not just a feeling, but something they can actually participate in, I mean, something they can learn about, it would be very empowering to them.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm thinking about this, and I think this is a wonderful idea. I mean, however, within the context of so much stress and pressure, how do we have kids focus on feelings and figuring out, you know, what love is and how to love if they're feeling the pressure of you know, having plenty of activities and really good grades and going to college and, you know, there's so much stress. How do we balance this out?
Yeah, I think that's exactly the point, is to give them at least for a few hours a week a opportunity just to get perspective.
Uh-huh.
It should not be necessarily be perceived, I think, that they should learn now something else or they should be engaging in the art of loving. I think the key goal would be just to give them a different perspective what life is all about. And,
uh-huh.
and just for them to know their life is more than just academics.
Right.
There are other things which are important than getting top grades and getting to the top schools. And in fact, their achievements, as important as they are, that their value as person does not depend on academic achievement. And
right.
as intuitive as this is to all of us, it is a different thing for them to really understand that and someone who conveys that to them.
Mm-hmm.
You're not more valuable or less valuable based on your grades. You know, you are valuable because you are a person.
Mm-hmm.
You're an individual. And so I think that would be the goal of this, that you have like something at school which really takes their mind off these pressures and just like, you know, gives them something else to look at, which actually may be quite helpful for them, not only to deal with pressures, but also to go on, you know, and identify who they want to be in life.
Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, I know there are probably lots of parents listening right now, and it will probably take a very long time to institute something like this in schools, at least on a broad level. But meanwhile, we as parents can talk to our own children about this, can't we?
We can and we should.
Yeah.
The issue is, as we alluded to earlier, often kids feel least understood by their parents during the teenage years. And
uh-huh.
and it's a natural process that distance themselves somewhat from their parents.
Right.
So that's why they need for an outside source. And often, as we know, when we say something, you know, or teenagers, that they do the opposite or think the opposite because we don't know anything.
That's right.
So I think even more there is the need for some an independent resource to them. And it's
yes.
even more critical in a time where other support systems, like religion, seems to be fading.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's
yeah,
actually
yeah.
not... seems to be fading. There's clear evidence, again, by statistics and surveys, that the influence of religion on children and young adults is rapidly fading, and religion.
We're going to head out here. I want to make sure we get your website in here. It's theforgottenartoflove.com, theforgottenartoflove.com. And Amin's book is The Forgotten Art of Love, What Love Means and Why It Matters. His name is spelled A-R-M-I-N-Z-A-D-E-H. And Amin, I'm very grateful you joined us here today. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Christine. It's been a pleasure. It's been wonderful to be on your show. Thank you so much. And wish you all the best. And once again, very happy birthday wishes to Benny.
Oh,
thank you very much. Appreciate that.
And thank you for joining us here today. I look forward to talking to you again soon.
You've been listening to The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey. Each week, this show engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information about the transformative healing work of Christine, visit www.stellarreflections.com. And for weekly topics, visit www.transformationtalkradio.com.